Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Happy evening. Happy Friday. This is Sam, host of Open World, formerly known as Against the Grain. And we're just popping on tonight to talk about a little bit of new stuff. Today it is June 9th, 2023. I just popped on Twitter and Reddit and all the things because I have not been touching my computer lately. Rob will not be joining us this evening. He had some stuff that he had to do. So I'm not sure when he'll be able to join us, but I know he will be able to at some point. My computer just froze. Give me one second here. Takes about half an hour for this baby to quit acting a fool. She's kind of touchy. So, you're all going to have to forgive me tonight. I've got a little bit of a cold because, you know, apparently getting colds in the spring is the thing now. Because, you know, cold season doesn't happen anymore. Anyway. So I'm going to pop over to Reddit because I am in the mood for some drama. I'm not even going to lie. This is like what I like get off on because I don't have that kind of stuff in my life. Thankfully, I am. And I have been made my life a little bit drama free because I'm going to tell you guys what. Having to deal with this stuff day in and day out all the time, my heart breaks for these kind of people. It's just, I can't begin to imagine. I mean, I used to have some of that stuff in my life, but, like, over the last few years, it's like, nope. And now even more so, it's just like, nope. So, the nopiest nope of Noperton. Hold on. What? What is this? Oh, my goodness. Hold on. We're going to read this one. All right. Am I the asshole for asking a disabled man's carer to not let him touch me? What? I was traveling home after a long trip and stopped at a gas station to use the restroom. It was unusually busy, and I had to stand in line for the women's room. Also in line was two women and several handicapped men, Down syndrome mostly, not sure if that matters, just want to paint the scene, who were also going to use the restroom. I have no problem with everyone using any bathroom. I'm also very friendly to people regardless of their disabilities. But the man behind me, he was grabbing himself, maybe because he really had to pee, but still he was trying to get my attention and he was touching me on the arms. I'm autistic myself and have a hard time being touched in general, and I have been driving for more than 6 hours, and I looked at the woman and said, please don't let him touch me. And they yelled at me and said I was very rude and mean. I just told them that I don't like being touched, peed, and went on my way. I get that he can't help it, but when they're taking men into the woman's room, when they know they like to touch people, I felt like it was their responsibility to assure the comfort of the people around them. You all think I overreacted. Comment number one. Only thing I would have done different is maybe address the man first. Please don't touch me. Yeah, I don't understand why she didn't address him first, but response to that comment, not always safe. I mean, that's what I would do too, but that means you are engaging further with someone who is already currently demonstrating that they are unsafe to be interacted with as they are busy demonstrating the limited ability to moderate their own behavior. Is somebody calling me? Hold on here. Give me 2 minutes here, guys. You know what? I'm just going to throw it open to commercial here because we didn't play no commercials last time. So just give me 2 minutes and we'll be right back.
Peter, the Korean films are my letter of recommendation. It is obvious their hearts are a letter of approval from Messiah. Dionysus from the 405 BC play the Baker and Jesus of Nazareth quote the same line, kicking against the pricks. That is plausible, is it not? Am I not an apostle?
Let's study this and more proof that a test of whom we love exists in the New Testament canon,
Join Everlasting Covenant Study Free From Paul, which airs Saturdays, noon Pacific, 1 Mountain, 2 Central, and 3 Eastern for 3 hours on Saturdays, where listeners enjoy fellowship and study of the words of Messiah versus yours, Paul. 3195276208. Saturday.
This is for all of us. Thank you, my healthy friends. Glad I can be here tonight. Hope you all are breathing air without wearing a face diaper. These masks...
Alrighty. I'm back. Give me 1 second here. Oh my goodness. Okay, there we go. It's kind of cute. It's like the minute I go live, I suddenly have 3 people call me at the same time. 3 people. I love you guys, but just give me a little bit of time. I'm on the radio show. Anyway. There we go. Hold on here. Okay, we're going back to this. So yeah, looking like people are saying that they are not the asshole, because that's pretty straightforward. We're going to go back. Hold on. My goodness. Okay. Am I the asshole for not giving my sister a clean plate? I don't know. We'll have to see. At dinner last night, my sister wanted a second helping, so I took her plate and got her one. She was upset that she saw the plate and asked why I brought her a dirty plate. I said it was her plate, and then she was just eating off of it. She said that was nasty and I should have gotten her a clean one. I think that since she was just the one eating off it, it can't be that dirty. My father said that it was indeed ill-mannered, although she was worse for calling me on it in front of everyone. I think it's silly to get a new plate. The only germs on it were her own. Not the asshole. This is ridiculous. I've never heard of someone getting a fresh plate for sulking helping. She can get her own damn fourth meal next time. No kidding. Unless you're at a buffet, but even then the rule has always seemed a little odd to me. As long as the serving dishes aren't touching the plate, what's the big deal? See, that's the problem, is people are often touching their plate with the serving dishes. Because I didn't even know that. Believe it or not, funny story, I didn't know that when you go to a buffet that you're not supposed to reuse your plate. I had never been to a buffet for a while before. So then when I was reusing my plate, I actually had to be told by like some of the people I had gone with. They're like, yo, you're not supposed to use the same plate. And I'm like, yo, like, didn't know that, bro. Never been to a buffet before. But it was actually really neat. It's really neat. So yeah, no, this isn't even, not the asshole. Using a clean plate is normal for a public buffet, is not normal for second helpings in a home. If the serving dish is on the table, she should have served herself in the same plate. I highly suggest the next time this comes up, she can get her own second helping. No kidding. We'll go over one more, and then we've got a guest who wants to call in with us tonight. Because he just messaged me. I, 26, have a 7-year-old. Oh, okay, that's a little young. 7-year-old daughter. My ex, 28. Wait a minute. So you had this kid when you were like 19 years old, and your ex was like 2 years older than you. I wouldn't say cradle robber, but like, yo. Anyway, my ex, 28, wasn't involved in her life by his own choosing. Back in December, he reached out. It took some time, talking and a little therapy. He's been back in our daughter's lives for about 4 months now. We are working with the courts to establish paternity and for him to get custody. In the meantime, I've let him visit her at my place. He's taking her on day trips. She's getting a bigger apartment. Since getting a bigger apartment, he's had her spend the night. He was supposed to visit Wednesday, have dinner with us, and watch a movie. We try to do things, the three of us, per the therapist's recommendations, so she can see us get along. My ex said he'd been over around 6 o'clock. He didn't show up. By 6:30, my daughter was hungry, so I fed her. I tried to put off the movie, but eventually let her watch it. She was disappointed about her dad not showing up. I put her to bed at 9. At 11:30, my ex freaking out. He said forgot we were supposed to have dinner. He only remembered because his girlfriend came home from work and asked how everything went. Rather than apologizing, he got mad at me and asked me why I didn't call him. I said, I'm not going to chase him down. I already spent 9 months doing that when I was pregnant and begging him to be in her life. I'm not going to do that now. It's up to him to make an effort and remember stuff. We had therapy the next day and she's on my side. However, my ex insists that I should have called. I'm frustrated that he hasn't even tried to apologize to her daughter. My mom said I should have called. Am I the asshole? No. He's a grown-ass man. Not the asshole. This really shows where ex's priorities lie. No version of reality are you responsible for reminding him about a date with his daughter. Interesting that the ex's girlfriend remembered and he didn't. Yeah, no kidding. The fact that the ex's girlfriend was inquiring about the evening and you couldn't even remember just goes to show. All right. Let's see if I can call my friend Pixie through this thing here again. Okay, let's see. Did I get the number right this time? That's the real question. If you guys were listening last time, if you're listening last time, you'd know that I called the wrong damn number.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Man, doing some thinking outside the box tonight.
Ooh, good, because my brain ain't working at all. I am sick and I am tired. So.
Oh. Well, it's like the old saying, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Right?
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. I did notice.
It is.
I have. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, not a big deal. It is what it is. We all get sick at some point, right? So.
You know, I don't think I've ever heard you use that phrase before, but there's a lot of people out there that would tell you to stay away from people that use that phrase because they're dangerous.
Oh. Yeah.
That's all right. I use it all the time, too. So, it's nice to be considered dangerous, I guess, at some points. How are you doing, Sam?
No kidding. How am I doing?
Yeah. I mean, what's going on? Are you okay? Or I mean.
Yeah. I just got a cold. That's all.
Oh.
I just got a cold, but it's kicking my ass. So.
Well, that's it.
That's it.
Okay. Well, I'm not gonna worry about that because I already know you'll kick its ass eventually.
Oh yeah, I'll be better tomorrow. I just didn't want to put off radio show tonight because, you know, I don't want to keep skipping if I don't have to. So I was like, meh, then I was like, meh, then I was like, no, I'm going to do it. So here I am.
Yeah, you're a soldier.
Yeah. All right, shoot, what do you got for us?
Okay, I guess you want me to talk so you don't have to.
You messaged, you said, hey, I want to come on. I'm like, okay, cool. What you got for us? Let's know, and then I'll pop in.
It is convenient because I will tell. Okay, so, okay, so I have two clients that both have cases out of the same state. Now, one case has already been adjudicated. It was a it was a, it was, we've talked about this case, that particular case before on your show. It was a, my buddy William, where he had to register as a sex offender basically because he took a plea agreement to avoid going to prison for something he didn't do at all. This guy is completely innocent, but they talked him into making a plea agreement in Pennsylvania. And he was living in North Carolina at the time, so they transferred his case down to North Carolina, and he had to register as a sex offender in the state of North Carolina. This is the first case. Okay. Now, he was supposed to, he was required to register from the Pennsylvania order for 10 years. That time was up in 2019, and I've discussed his case, I think, a few times on your show. Because we've done some other stuff in the meantime, we're trying to get the judgment voided out of Pennsylvania in the meantime. But anyway, some stuff happened while he was in North Carolina. He went through a foreclosure. He was unable to provide a – he's a truck driver, so he was unable to provide a address when his house got foreclosed on because he was sleeping in his truck. Okay, so the state of North Carolina had him registered as an out-of-state offender, which is way different from being registered as an in-state offender. And everything was going fine for years. But then they foreclosed on his house, and he didn't have an address. And so then North Carolina charged him with failure to register, which is their statutes, not Pennsylvania's, right? So the original case was out of Pennsylvania, but he was living in North Carolina. Now he's charged with a North Carolina crime based on his Pennsylvania bullshit. Excuse my language. Okay, so anyway, so he's now he has a North Carolina charge for failure to register, right? And this kind of thing happens all the time. I'm going to explain this to you because I've dealt with this personally in my own life. I had a case out of Oregon, and every time they released me from jail, one of the first things they told me was, one of the things that was on the documents was, you cannot leave the state, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, we're going to release you from jail, but you can't leave the state as part of, as a condition of your release. In my situation, every time they released me on that same form paperwork, it's a format. They just have the same form paperwork. Every time they released me, I signed my name, all rights reserved, under duress. And then they released me. Within 36 to 72 hours, every time they released me, I was on a bus or a plane back to California. Because okay. I didn't care. I don't care. I just don't care. Personally, that's just me. You tell me I can't leave the state, but if I stay in the state, I'll be homeless, and if I don't stay in the state, I can go home. So I just didn't care. I was like, I'm going to go home. Screw them. You know, I didn't care. I signed it, all reservation rights, whatever. So basically, I'm just mentioning that to let you know that there's these standard forms that they provide for you that, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's all nonsense and ridiculous and unenforceable. But anyway, so this guy has, let me further explain that so I can get back into what I'm doing with this case. So when I got to California, I got arrested. And California charged me with their own crime. They charged me with their statutes of being a fugitive from justice because I had left Oregon. Okay? Kind of the same thing happened in this case. This guy's sentence was out of Pennsylvania. The crime was in Pennsylvania. The sentence was out of Pennsylvania. It doesn't matter whether he did it or not. The fact is, he didn't do it. But anyway, so because of the Pennsylvania sentence, he was required to register in North Carolina where he lived. Okay. So then all these years go by, and he was just about over his tenure requirement, and his tenure requirement would have been in 2019. So in 2017, they did the foreclosure on his house and blah, 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 and now they charged him with failing to register. So now North Carolina has their hooks in him for violating a North Carolina law, even though his sentence was out of Pennsylvania, right? Because they – same thing with my case. Like, my problems were in Oregon, but when I got caught in California, California wanted to charge me with their crime of being a fugitive from justice. So even though there's another – even though all your problems are in another state, they – the state you're in wants to sink their hooks into you. And this is what happened in William's case. Okay. That all being said and done, we did all kinds of stuff in Pennsylvania, and we're actually about ready to either take them to – we're not sure where we're going to go with that, Supreme Court of Pennsylvania or federal court, because there's an underlying issue there. But the problem is North Carolina has this failure to register charge. Okay, so that's North Carolina's charge for a violation of a North Carolina statute. All right. Now, let's back off of that. I have another client in North Carolina who is facing new charges, totally separate client, totally separate charges. Okay, so the thing is, the Williams case out of North Carolina has already been adjudicated. He's already been sentenced. He actually moved to Georgia. He was sentenced in North Carolina to probation for failure to register. So he's sentenced in North Carolina. But then he moved to Georgia. So they transferred his probation to Georgia. Okay, so this case is, William's case, as far as North Carolina is concerned, is over. It's been adjudicated. He's been convicted of failure to register. He's now on probation that has been transferred to another state. Okay. This other guy, Ryan, has a brand new case out of North Carolina for a totally separate issue. He was arrested in December of last year. He's been to court 3 or 4 times, but has not yet been arraigned. So the case, in some respects, technically hasn't even started yet in Brian's case. Okay, but both of these unrelated cases with these unrelated defendants are out of the same state, North Carolina. So the plaintiff in both of these cases is exactly the same. Can you imagine the nightmare that this creates for the plaintiff? I know you've got a cold and you're frustrated and tired, but you're a smart person. Can you imagine the issues that are going to be created when we hit the plaintiff with the same motion in 2 different cases, 2 different counties, 2 different judges, 2 different prosecutors, but the same plaintiff? We're going to hit them with this thing called a non-appearance ex parte request for disclosure of all criminal bonds, bonding, and other related or connected documents and or instruments. Okay? This thing is genius. It's 3 pages. It's simple. But all 3 pages are packed with case law and statutes. Now, here's what's... This is why I wanted to go on our show tonight, because we're talking about outside the box thinking here, okay? Like really outside the box thinking that applies to the plaintiff regardless, right? Because the plaintiff is always the same. It's the state of North Carolina, right?
Yeah.
The plaintiff has two different actions going on with two different individuals, quote-unquote defendants, in two different counties with two different judges and two different prosecutors. Do you think those judges or those prosecutors have a clue that there's any connection between those cases? Of course they don't. One judge and one prosecutor thinks there's one defendant in one county, and another judge and another prosecutor thinks there's another defendant in another county. But here's where the outside-the-box thinking comes in. It's the same plaintiff. So when we file this, non-appearance ex parte request for disclosure of all criminal bonds, bonding, and other related connected documents and or instruments, guess what's going to happen? The plaintiff's agents in both counties, when we file these simultaneously into different cases with different defendants in different counties with different judges and different prosecutors, they're going to answer differently. Here's what's going to happen when they answer differently. We're going to take both of those answers. We're going to file them into federal court as a class action based on the fact that the plaintiff is incompetent. You feel me?
Mm-hmm.
You see where I'm coming from, kind of?
Yes.
We're going to file this same document into two different cases in two different counties with two different judges and two different prosecutors. Mm-hmm. And I will bet you, okay, I'm not a betting man. And if I were a millionaire, I would bet you $1 million. But since I'm not a betting man and I'm not rich, I'll bet you a dollar that they both come back with different answers saying different things to the same document.
Uh-huh.
Now, what happens when they do that? Now you've got the plaintiff's agents saying two different things.
Yeah.
To answer the same question.
Uh-huh.
The substance of this form, the substance of this motion is not going to change. Nothing's going to change in this document except the defendant's name. That's it. Nothing. This document is going to remain exactly the same, but the only difference is going to be the defendant's name and the county.
Yeah.
But it's in the state court of North Carolina, county of, that's going to, it's going to be different counties, but the defendant's name is going to be different. But the plaintiff's name is going to be the same. So when we get different answers to the same exact document, worded word for word, in two different public records of the plaintiff, right? Because both of them are going into the public record of the courts of the plaintiff.
Yeah.
Now, what's going to happen when we get different answers from different prosecutors, different agents of the same plaintiff? Doesn't that prove that the plaintiff himself is incompetent to testify? Not only that, but that provides us a class action in federal court because we're going to ask the same question in federal court, but there's now going to be two co-defendants against the same plaintiff. Because the plaintiff's never going to change. It's always going to be the state of North Carolina.
Are you planning on pursuing like a class action? Like, it's one can, but are you planning to? And like, what...
We just, It's funny because both of these quote-unquote defendants actually know each other.
Huh.
So, and they both know me, and we've been talking to each other, and they both rely on me to do the things that they can't do.
Yeah.
I have free reign to talk about either one of their cases with the other party because they're friends. They were friends before I ever knew either one of them. They believe it or not, knew each other prior to me getting involved in either one of their cases. But they both have cases out of the same with the same plaintiff. And I've talked to both of them today, and the answer to your question is, yeah. Yeah, we're planning on doing that if we need to, which we all agree that we probably will need to, because both quote unquote defendants already know that the plaintiff operates in a corrupt environment.
Yeah.
They're both smart and they know what's up. So, yes, we are planning that. If we, obviously there might be a hiccup. I mean, you never know how things go. And one of these people might answer, one of these agents of the plaintiff in one county or one case or the other may give us, they may dismiss the case. We're actually hoping that they dismiss the case in one of them, the one that hasn't been arraigned yet.
Yeah.
Because if they do that, then we can use that in the other case.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then they're both going to be still issuing different answers, different responses. Uh-huh. We're gonna learn a lot about the plaintiff, right? Through its agents.
Okay.
Because we're gonna make these agents that don't know each other and don't have a clue about these other defendants or these other cases, we're gonna make them answer. And if they answer in a substantially different form, we're gonna take both of those answers and we're gonna file a federal class action. Isn't this beautiful?
It is beautiful. I do have a question, though.
Yes. Please
so
ask away. I like it when you ask questions.
The likelihood of them having the same or similar answers, at the very least similar, is pretty much slim to nothing if they don't know about each other. What would be the chances, then, that they are in cahoots and they are talking to one another and they do give the same answers? I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying, like, if by the off chance they do give the same answers, what would happen then?
That is a good question, and we've already contemplated that, and here's my answer.
Okay.
First of all, they don't. They don't know each other. Okay. They don't know about these other things. So the chances of them giving the same or similar answers are very slim.
Yeah.
However, if, and they will, it's not impossible that they would give the similar answers. Here's what you do in that case. You take those similar answers and you leave them completely out of your case that you bring to the federal court. Because here's the reason why I'm saying that. If they answer in similar fashions to particular subject matter, then you know that they both agree on that particular thing, that one set of facts or that one thing. They agree on that, right?
Uh-huh.
So here's the answer. you take what they don't agree on or where they're dissimilar opinions on the same subject matter, and you use that and nothing more. You never use the things they agree on. Use the things they disagree on. Because if they agree on things, then you look it up. You find out why they agree on those things. And then you have a solid case as to what you're going to argue. You're not going to argue those things because they absolutely are in cahoots on that shit. But
wouldn't you be able
you
to
argue
that they're on the cahoots? Like, wouldn't you be able to prove that they're like, you know, they're not supposed to be talking, but if they have the same answers over the same stuff, that you could prove that it's like they're supposed to be different, but yet they're working together, even though they're different judges in different counties.
No. I think you're missing what I'm saying here, and I don't know how to express it properly. It's probably my fault for not knowing how to express this properly. But
no, I know what you're saying. Like you want
to. They're
know,
not
you
going
look
to.
At the
they
that they're talking that are different. But
they don't. They don't know each other. They don't. They absolutely don't. There's too many variables in there for them to have known each other. There are too many variables. It'd be like a million and one chance that they knew each other. And and that the plaintiff's agents would know each other. And here's the thing. Maybe one of them here's a possibility. Maybe one of them will see this document and go, shit, this is just crazy. I don't know how to deal with this. And they'll upload it to their lawyer friends and they'll be like, hey, you know, how do I deal with this? Because I need advice and you're a lawyer and I'm a lawyer and we're all lawyers and so let's talk about that, right?
But
then you're still talking about the possibility that the other lawyer in the other case, the other plaintiff's agents, the other prosecutor would see that and go, wait, I have the same thing. It's very unlikely. However, so what if that does happen? Well, here's what's going to go down if that does happen, is that they'll all align their answers almost perfectly, which would be a real big red flag. It's like, you know, because when you bring that in front of a federal judge, it's like the teacher going, you guys cheated because you both had the same answers.
Yeah.
And the federal judge doesn't give a crap about a North Carolina prosecutor. He's going to make the prosecutor answer. He's going to be like, well, what's your reason? What's your reason? And he's going to ask both prosecutors, what's your reason?
Yeah.
And if they continue to answer the same way, it just proves to that federal judge that they're both cheating and you're just asking a simple question. But and it's like you just want to know what 2 plus 2 is. You're asking the teacher what 2 plus 2 is. You're not saying it's 4. But if the teacher asks the class and two people answer 4 on paper, you know, I mean, like on a written test, right? Like, let's not just do this verbally, but like on a written test. The teacher hands out a piece of paper and says, everybody answer this question. And you got everybody answering everything except 4. But two people that were sitting next to each other answered 4. The teacher, a.k.a. the judge, the federal judge, is going to go, well, come on, guys. You guys were sitting right next to each other. How did you come to the same conclusion when nobody else did? It doesn't matter if they were, if everybody else was wrong and you were right. The teacher, the judge, the federal judge, is going to go, how come everybody else got it wrong and the two people that were sitting next to each other got it right? Somebody cheated. You know what I mean? These federal judges are not stupid. And that's why you got to drag this stuff kind of, you got to exhaust your administrative remedies in the state courts. But well, as soon as you drag it out of the state court and into a federal court, there's no more, we're all friends here. The judge and the prosecutor and the defense attorney and all, they're not all friends anymore, because the federal judge doesn't give a crap whether you guys play golf together. What he wants to know is, he doesn't play golf with you, so what are you doing? Are you obeying the rules or not? Or are you just calling each other shots? Because I'm not the state judge playing golf with the county prosecutor and the district or the public defender. I'm a new guy. I'm a federal judge. And do you think I'm not going to recognize that the state prosecutor the public defender are playing golf with each other? I don't care if they do or not, but they don't play golf with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to let them call each other shots, because we're all playing for equal points here. Right, they're not all friends. Like this, when you put it in front of a federal judge, it's not the same as putting it in front of a state judge, a county judge, a state judge. They play golf with these people. You put that in front of a federal judge, the federal judge doesn't play golf with those people.
Mm-hmm.
He plays golf with other federal prosecutors and other federal judges. He doesn't give a crap about state personnel.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't play golf with the federal judge does not play golf with a local district attorney. They don't. That's unlikely. It changes the game. But because these two people know each other, this is what I was getting at, because these two people know each other, both have a case, one has been adjudicated, one has not, out of the same state, mm-hmm. with the same plaintiff, we're going to file this motion in both cases. We're going to see mm-hmm. what happens. What I've heard from a friend of mine who I talked to earlier was that, let me read his exact words, because I asked him about this particular thing. I've been talking to him about this particular document. It's been around. I've been in this for 12 or 15 years. He's been in it for 15 or 20. And both of us knew about this particular document. So when I got it the other day again, I never put much effort into it, but I got it the other day again from somebody who never used it, but was like, oh, you know, hey, there's this. And I'm like, oh, yeah, forgot about that. I literally have forgotten more about law than most people ever remember. But anyway, I texted him. I said, hey, this is this document I got. I know you're familiar with it. He's like, oh, yeah, 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 yeah. He says, okay, I'm reading his text word for word, and my response is word for word. He says, I've been sharing that document since before I lost my house. It's pretty self-explanatory. Just fill it out to fit a case and file on the docket. And my question back to him was, okay, that part I understand. But what's the ultimate point of it? Did they ever actually produce the bonds? And his response was, it has varied results. Usually they cycle out the judge and prosecutor or dismiss the case.
So they don't ever actually go anywhere. They just fuck around or try to get rid of it.
Yes. And remember, a dismissal is not a settlement.
No.
Because they can dismiss the case, which means you are no longer liable.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean they're still not trading the bonds and securities they issued on the case in the background.
Yeah.
A dismissal is not a settlement. And no. And this particular document is geared towards settlement. And when he responded that way and he said it has varied results, usually they cycle out the judge and prosecutor or dismiss the case. Okay, neither one of those will ever answer this document. They're both good results. They're both good results, but neither one of them will ever answer this document. And that leads me to believe that this document is very, 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 very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Because a guy who is, I trust a lot, and I've seen proof of his work.
Yeah.
Not evidence, I've seen proof. Oh, that's another thing I wanted to get into. Man, there was a nightmare that happened the other day, but in one of these cases that got me into the whole difference between evidence and proof, and that's something I would like to discuss sometime this evening, but not immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, what I would like to discuss is the fact that if this... Okay. Usually they cycle out the judge and prosecutor or dismiss the case. Now, here's the thing. That answer is based on his perception of one particular endeavor. Now, we have two endeavors. One is an adjudicated case where the sentence has already been laid down, and the other one is a case where the defendant hasn't even been arraigned yet. So we got a new case and an adjudicated case. And we're going to file this into both cases. That presents another problem for these people that don't know each other and don't know their cases, like these prosecutors that don't know the other cases even going on. They're going to answer differently. They're going to have some similarities in their answer. That's a given. Because they have to pretend like they're following the law. So there's some things that will be similar in their answers,
uh-huh.
But there's other things that won't be. That's what we're going after here. The things that aren't the same. Okay. Why aren't they the same?
Not like the other.
Yes. A thing similar is not the same.
Yeah.
But at the same time, something that's not even similar is very different. And those are the things we're going to focus on. And because we're going to track those down, ultimately we expect to end up in federal court with a class action suit on the bonds.
Yeah.
And that's going to be ridiculous. Like, I mean, when you got two different plaintiffs bringing a class action suit in a federal court against the same defendant, which in that case would be the state. The defendant would be the state. Right now, the state is the plaintiff in both of their cases, but if we have to bring this to federal court, it's going to reverse the whole process, because now we have two co-plaintiffs against one similar defendant.
Uh-huh.
Right? Because the plaintiff in both of their cases, their state cases, is the state. If the plaintiff's agents don't answer our questions in the proper context, then we have to bring the plaintiff. Now we have two people asking the federal government to explain what the hell the quote-unquote alleged plaintiff in the state cases was doing. right? Uh-huh. We have a class action suit in a federal court for, at the very least, what's called a declaratory judgment. Look, we two different people presented the plaintiff with the same question, and the plaintiff answered it differently for each person.
Mm-hmm.
So what the fuck is going on? Excuse my language. I mean, what the hell is going on, right? Like, is the plaintiff competent at all?
Uh-huh.
And if the plaintiff is competent, then please, federal judge, tell the plaintiff, state, to answer the question.
Yeah.
That's a declaratory judgment. That's not a criminal or a civil matter at all. It's what's called an extraordinary judgment.
Okay.
Or extraordinary pleadings. But you can utilize that in a class action in the federal court mm-hmm. to say, hey, we asked, you know, two different people asked the same guy the same question, and that guy sent two different people to answer it in two different ways. So let's determine which way is right. This is where they settle. I told you I was, you know me, I'm always thinking outside the box, but this was a new thing to me. Like, this is a new way of doing it to me, and I'm super excited about it.
Mm-hmm.
If I didn't have both of these clients having issues in the same state, I never would have come across this. Yeah. I never would have come across this. I've had, you know, I deal with clients in different states all the time. But if I didn't have two clients who don't even live in the same state, but have a problem with the same state, have this same thing, and then all of a sudden this being presented at the same time through a somebody who doesn't have anything to do with anybody, just a friend of mine that happened to send me this, and I was like, yeah, I've seen this before. And then I thought about it, and I was like, oh, my God. And I contacted my other friend, and I was like, hey, dude, check this out. And he was like, no way. Yeah, check it. Do it, man. Like, this is a really interesting situation, and it's one worthy of definitely utilizing that outside-the-box thinking.
This is just going to be wild. I'm just sitting here and it's like, man, this is the kind of thing, like, you know, I don't know if you know, but, like, Michael Abernathy, when he was trying to get the course on, like, basically undoing, like, mortgage fraud and stuff, they, like, banned him from the course. Like, legitimately.
Oh.
And they thought they were going to be smart, but then his dad went in because they were trying to cornhole his dad, not realizing his dad was just as smart as his son. And they had to admit on and for the record that he got them. He got them. The on and for the record that they had to admit that mortgages were fraudulent. And it's been nothing but total chaos, and the courts have been scrambling and stuff ever since. Like, it's just wild. The things that they were doing to him, he's even had, like, hits out and stuff on him. Like, it's been absolutely insane. But he got him. He got it on and for the record. And I just foresee, like, a lot of, like, wins, but at the same time, chaos coming at the same time, that as soon as they catch on and they realize, oh, snap, we're being cornholed here and there ain't nothing we can do, it's just, like, I'm curious to see what kind of measures they're going to take. You know? It's like you got them between a rock and a hard place, and they're going to have to figure out something really shady, because they will.
Okay. I don't talk about this very much because I never paid too much attention to his stuff. Okay. But have you've heard of, I'm sure you've heard of David Wynn Miller, judge plenipotentiary, who uses the quantum language to beat court contracts and all that stuff. Have you ever come across that guy, David Wynn Miller? David Wynn Miller, W-Y-N-N Miller, is a judge plenipotentiary, and he used quantum language. His big thing was quantum language to beat cases. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. Maybe some of your listeners have. As far as I know, he's deceased. But I will tell you this. I have a good friend that knows a lot about trusts, and she lived in Hawaii for a while. Her and I used to communicate a lot about the nature of trusts and, you know, what was possible by utilizing that commercial construct, okay? But she actually went to court with David Wynn Miller, not because she meant to, but she just happened to be in Hawaii, and he was in Hawaii, and he was filing his stuff, and she went to court with this guy, and she recognized him in the foyer, you know, the lobby of the court. And so she tried to get on the same elevator with him, and she couldn't because there was 4 federal marshals around this guy, and they wouldn't let anybody else on the elevator. So she took a different elevator. She went up to the same floor, went into the courtroom, and apparently it was only, you know, a few court personnel, like bailiffs and marshals and judges and prosecutors and court recorders and all that shit. There was, like, literally nobody else. There was no witnesses in this courtroom. But she walked in, and this is what she told me. The judge in that hearing literally ordered that he was never allowed back in a, and this is a federal district court, not a state court. This is a federal district court in Hawaii, which now that I've learned some things makes sense because there's only 2 Article III courts left in the United States. One is in Hawaii. Anyway, that's probably what court that guy was in, which is why there was nobody there. But she was in there. She was the only person in there besides everybody else and him, the court personnel and him. There was no other. This was almost a closed hearing. It was just unannounced. And this guy had 4 marshals escorting him up to the courtroom and got in front of a judge. She said she didn't feel like they were there to cause him any harm. She felt like they were there to protect him. That's the vibe she got when that happened. But she got up to the courtroom. She walked in, and she was the only person. She sat in the back of the courtroom. And that judge told that man never to file anything ever again or appear in any federal court ever. And he ordered that person to do that. And this guy is, I think to the best of my knowledge, he's deceased at this point. But if you can still look up his stuff on YouTube. There's plenty of it on there. He explains quantum language, and that's what he was doing, and that's why I actually stopped paying attention to him early into my research career. This is 14 years ago. Probably 10 years ago, I stopped paying attention to this guy because his process was too complicated for me. It was just too complicated. But apparently he had it right. Whatever he was doing was right. And that's the only thing I can tell you about what happens when you start doing things right. The guy I talked to earlier today, my buddy, and I approached him about this particular document. He's got a federal judge in California that basically put him on a do not detain list years ago. He's shown me his passport. He's got a 07 endorsement. People think passports just you get visas on them. No, their endorsements are what's important. This guy is like legit. Like he's shown me his passport. He's got a 07 endorsement, which, hold on. Let me read that to you just for kicks and grins. And then we'll go on break, I guess, because you need money to keep this going. There we go. Okay. This one, info. Where is it? It's the passport thing. It's got to be recent. Supreme Court rulings. Anyway, treason. Jesus, it's got to be somewhere in here. Hold on. If I can't find it real quick, I'll just give you the basic principle. Oh, there it is. A 07 endorsement. There's a 07D and a 07AD. The AD is basically the bearer is a member of the family of the 7D. Okay, but the 7D says, and this is straight from the State Department. This is their legit stuff off their, this is their endorsements. A 7D endorsement is, the bearer is ambassador extraordinary and plenipotentiary of the United States of America to whatever country. I don't think it matters what country that they put on there. I don't know what they put on somebody's passport to what country. I don't know. They might say United States. They might say China. Who cares what they say? What it is, I can tell you what it does, is when you get that 7D endorsement and you use it in a domestic capacity, like you show a cop your fucking passport and say, excuse my language.
It's not PG on this show.
I know, but we're trying to reach out to a bunch of people that may not like that particular language, so I'm trying to appeal to everybody.
I'm going to put it this way. They might not like this particular language, but they don't seem to mind the pretty lies that the courts and the plaintiffs of which you're speaking about and all the people who run the political sphere, the politicking nonsense, they seem to love the pretty lies that are being told so long as there's not a bad word being used, but the rough truth they can't seem to handle. Fuck them. Let them soak in the lies then. That's all I'm going to say. If you can't handle a bad word because, it hurts my feelings, but meanwhile you're having it shoved up your rear end with a cactus and you just enjoy that because it came nicely from the politicians, well, then you deserve everything you get. There we go. That's what I have to say about that. You deserve it.
Well, I have two questions now. The first question is, why are those people listening to your show? And the second question is, actually, it's not even a question. Why would those people be listening to your show? But regardless of that, there are people listening to your show that probably want to learn things and have their own morals, and I don't. When I bring things forth personally, like,
then they can start their own show. If they want something without cussing and swearing and things, they can start their own show.
I understand that. I'm just saying that I'm trying to be respectful of everybody's opinion so that we can get the message out better. That's all. I don't honestly care either. I'll say all the words I want because I...
Uh-huh.
Come on, Sam. You know things about me that very few people on the planet know. We've...
Uh-huh.
I mean...
That's just my opinion, though.
I agree, and I understand.
If they can do it better, they can do it themselves then. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, all I'm saying is I'm trying to not offend anyone with my language while I'm trying to help people do things, because I think a lot of people that do listen to your show probably don't have a problem with that, but some people may just be new and trying to learn, and you know, we can teach everybody without... maybe I'm just doing this for myself, Sam. I think we could teach... I could teach everybody without using foul language. I do get upset, and I do say things sometimes. And I'm not going to apologize for my foul language. I'm just trying to do better by not using it when I get excited about things. So that people that are offended by that, but... aren't, like, really upset about the way that the things that they're learning or the person they're learning it from. I mean, I expect everybody to be upset about what they're learning.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I learn something, I get upset about it. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm never not upset about what I'm learning. I'm like, Jesus, is that really happening? Holy crap, how the hell do we fix this, you know? Like, I get upset, but I don't have an issue with language, and I just... Anyway, I spent way too much time on that excuse. what we're going back to is... what can we teach people? So, I'm going to let you take a commercial break because I think it's about 5 minutes overdue. I would love it if you, like, came back to me and we could keep talking.
Absolutely. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back.
Earthing, also known as grounding, is the act of touching our body's skin directly to the earth, just like our ancestors did as they slept, sat, and walked on the ground nearly every day of their lives. This simple connection allows Earth's natural negative electrons to enter the human body, pacifying dangerous free radicals, which, if left unchecked, can cause severe damage to cells that can lead to many chronic diseases. Ground Therapy's patented process and suite of products were designed for you to experience all the benefits of grounding in your busy and modern lifestyle. And you'll experience the benefits of grounding within the safety and comfort of your home or office throughout the entire day, just as if you were touching the earth itself.
The information is provided for general informational purposes only. The contents are not intended or implied to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Ground Therapy Incorporated makes no representations about the efficiency, appropriateness, or suitability of any specific tests, procedures, treatments, services, opinions, healthcare providers, or other information that may be contained in or available through the information provided.
Peace, what's up, y'all? This is Ninja Scroll. Check out my newest album, Renewed Mind, with songs like this. Solve Coagula. Solve Coagula. Tear down and rebuild the whole system. Bible prophecy fulfilled. Snakes in the grass. In center position. We got snakes in the grass. Rally through the high pass. Traps all laid out. Avoid the bomb blast. I got ya right where I want ya. Like a raw line in the field, I stalked ya. Creeped up on ya, peeped on your aura. Laying in wait, ready to pounce on ya. Once I get ya, you'll be a goal. Can you hear me now?
Just all part of the game.
Ain't this thing for so long now, it's time to open up your eyes. Look
look at how you're living, just to follow where we're sitting.
And the new norm's the new world order. Yeah, go get yours right now at officialninjascroll.web.com. That's official, ninjascroll.web.com.
Trying to show you everything, but you ain't care. Got you running scared, it's fear that is the main weapon. Peace to the people that was always prepping. I'm stepping on toes trying to wake you up.
Freaks, outsiders, weirdos, the wallflowers, oddball loser, fish out of water, speak up, talk quieter. We are different. There's no arguing. It's a fact. A patchwork of flaws, we grow and adapt. We're funky, unconventional. See life through kaleidoscope eyes. In a field full of clovers, with our four leaves, we bask in blue skies. Flaws are natural. Our imperfections, our weaknesses, our scars. There is a misfit in all of us. We just have to be brave enough to embrace who we are.
Remember when no one thought that 1 year from the election, the Dow would be up 28.5%.
You've got very strong growth, a terrific employment market.
We have no inflation, virtually no inflation.
Wages climbed 2.7%. The unemployment rate matched a 50-year low.
Oil prices dropping today, tumbling more than 3%.
President Trump's policies, tax cuts, deregulation, opening energy.
Whether you're a blue-collar or white-collar worker, he's taking care of all collars.
He is rebuilding this economy
in ways experts say was never possible.
The Biden administration faces another crisis amid a growing
backlog. It is not a pretty picture here at the pump. The price of gas increasing more than 6% over.
You're paying more for everything.
Unmute myself. There we go. Figure out the buttons. Hello, everybody. This is Sam, host of Open World, formerly known as the Game for Grain, and we are back with Pixie talking about the updates on his cases and the fun things to come.
They are definitely so fun. Yeah, I'm here. They're definitely fun. This couldn't have all happened at a better time.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, I got Violet. She wants to listen in, so I'm trying to. You know her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm just trying to text her the number so she can call in.
She can either call in or she can head to www.freedomizerradio.com, click listen live, and it'll take you to the site so you can listen live. In fact, I can message her right now.
Yeah, please do.
I have her on my Facebook.
Yeah, good, good. She says, oh, how do I listen? I'm okay. Going through a lot. I screwed up and fell in love. I think he got vaxxed. I don't have the balls to ask. And she just asked if she needs a passcode or anything.
No passcode.
I probably shouldn't have shared all that with you. I don't know if she would have wanted me to do that, but I was just reading the text just now as I got them. Anyway, yeah, she's trying to get in on the call, and I love her to death. I know you do.
Yeah, she's pretty good.
She's got an interesting situation that has nothing to do with, like, what I was talking about, but she actually has two children that don't have birth certificates.
Yeah, and she's another one. There's a whole bunch of them out there. I think that's pretty much how I met you, is when I used to run the Sovereign Littles Group, because there was this lady who had started the Sovereign Littles Group. And I was like, holy crap, like 6 years ago now, 7 years ago? It was a while ago. And
yeah,
she has three kids, all of which that were unregistered. And then she just kind of randomly decided to shut the group down because there was some stuff she was going through and blah, blah, blah. And then I kind of restarted it because I was like, well, there's no point in having this happen. So I restarted it, but I just invited a bunch of everybody that was still there back into the group. And then shortly after, that's how we started talking. Because I still remember our first interview. I was so nervous. Holy crap.
Yeah, that's a scary endeavor, man. The state sure whatever that plaintiff is, it definitely likes kids.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm sure over the years you've delved into the child protection services and all that nonsense, and I'm not going to get into that because that wasn't the purpose of my call. But I'm sure you know. All right,
I am fully aware of how corrupt and evil that entire organization is.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the old stuff. So we split off. We were talking about Michael. Then there was that guy you were talking about in courts where he got banned from court. So let's go back to your court case stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, honestly, at this point, I would like questions because the last few times I've been on, I just talked. And, you know, I mean, I'm constantly researching and studying and learning and trying and learning and trying. But I've been trying to gear the last few conversations I've had with you on your radio show toward more questions, you know, because questions lead me to new answers. So, I mean, those are really the best thing is, does anybody have any questions? I mean, do you have any questions? Does anybody have any questions? Like, because
I'm going to see if one of our callers, because there's somebody else that popped on. I'm going to see if one of the callers would like to ask a question. Just give me 1 second here.
I would love that.
Right. I hadn't been thinking of questions.
There you go.
I have a few comments about what you said before.
Okay.
One of them is I do not recommend a class action because, first of all, you have to ask the judge for approval, and second, the approval will only come if it is controlled by a lawyer. You have to have an attorney in charge. You cannot have a pro se doing a class action. So what you would have is everybody who, you know, is involved would have to show up as a pro se. I don't mean to discourage you. Go ahead and try it, but I think that's what you'll run into.
Okay. Are you in the United States?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. What's your name, brother?
Rod.
Rod. Okay. This is new information to me, or maybe it's not. Again, I've forgotten more about the law than most people know, and I say that in not an egotistical way. I say that in a way that I really mean that I appreciate people bringing things that I forgot back to my attention. So can you?
You want a source?
No, yeah, I would. I would like to be in touch with you via email.
Oh, okay.
Because I would like you to reiterate what you said because I really need to think about that because you probably know something
right.
I don't.
Right.
So
a class action lawsuit must be controlled by an attorney. It cannot be a pro se. If you look at the definition of class action, I think it'll say that. Where is class action defined? It's going to be a statute. Probably the same.
I'm assuming this is a federal statute.
Yeah. And you also, right, you have to get class certification from the judge.
That I am definitely aware of. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
You're correct.
Here's
Rule
22. Okay. Here's FRCP 23 class actions. Um, One or more members of a class may sue or be sued as representative parties on behalf of all members only if the class is numerous. Common questions of law or fact. Claims are typical. Representative party will fairly and adequately protect the interests of the class, and that's the scam that the judges don't believe anybody can.
My apologies. I don't mean to interrupt you. We're looking at 22 USC?
I'm looking at FRCP.
Oh, the Federal Rules of Civil. Okay.
Yeah,
FRCP. What's the title? What number?
23 class actions. I just did a.
Oh, yep. Okay. All right. My apologies for the delay. I'm trying to look up what you're saying and that we could discuss it, as I can see it as you.
Right.
We're looking at 23 class actions.
Right.
Right. One or more members of a class may sue or be sued as representative parties on behalf of all members only if the class is so numerous that joinder of all members is impractical. Wait, that's very strange. Number two, there are questions of law or fact common to the class. Okay, that would probably be where we would go with our thing. Number three, the claims or defenses of the representative parties are typical of the claims or defenses of the class. And, that's a really terrible word. I hate that. And that means we have to overcome all four of those, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
I think I found the class. I don't want to interrupt you, but I don't want to do things the slow way either, and that's a problem. Maybe you should keep reading, and then I'll direct you to what I found that I think is relevant.
This is actually new information to me. This is new information to me. Again, before tonight, I never considered a class action.
Okay.
Right? Because I stated prior to this that most of my clients are out of state I've never had two clients in the same situation, so we were considering the class action. This is a good thing that you brought to my attention, because now we have to meet all four of those, because it says number one and there's a semicolon, number two and there's a semicolon, number three and there's a semicolon and the word and. That means that we have to meet all four of those qualifications in order to bring it as a class action.
Yes.
And you are correct. We may not meet that burden. So I appreciate you bringing that to my attention.
However, I will also
find a way to make all four of those things happen if we can, just so we can do the class action.
Okay. Yeah. And so what that will do is binding on people who did not opt out of the class, who've never heard of you. You're supposed to make an effort to inform everybody. If you know a lot of people, you probably know someone who's gotten things in the mail. Oh, you're part of a class. Somebody's suing for us. This and that. And usually, it's like everything. It's a scam. Usually, the attorney gets most of it, and they get a little bit to be divided up to all the class members. Other than that, everybody has to show up as a pro se, to defend their own rights. So I'm seeing under the notes, it's quite a ways down the page, in a plaintiff class action, the court usually would appoint as class counsel only an attorney or attorneys who have sought appointment. Different considerations may apply.
Hold on for a second. I don't know what page you're on, but I'm on Cornell Law School, Okay. Okay.
Right.
I'm assuming. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Notes.
Yes.
Okay. Where are we going?
Down. Right. I did a search for the word attorney, and it's the 12th occurrence out of 44, if that helps. Or if you could look at for the phrase in a plaintiff.
I'm not able to do that because I don't have internet. I have my phone.
Oh, okay.
Literally all
well,
I'm working
okay.
with my phone. I'm a very
right.
poor
well,
person who
I gotcha. It's about 70% of the way down the page, if that helps. Talking about paragraph 2.
Clause 2, a creditor's action for liquidation or reorganization. Okay, I'm sorry, brother. I'm trying to stay with you because
right.
this is, again, new information to me, so I'd like to... Okay, I
right.
have... Where I'm at the point where it says Notes of Advisory Committee on Rules, 1937. Note to Subdivision A.
I can find that. Okay, I've got Committee Notes on Rules 2003 Amendment.
Okay, hold on.
Halfway down, it's a little, it's about 55.
Note to Advisory Committee on Rules, 1946. Which amendment?
2003.
Oh, okay. We're going to have to go down a little bit more. Hold one moment, please. I mean, I want to follow what you're saying because, I don't know everything, obviously.
Sure.
So let's get to the Notes Advisory Commission 87. You said which year?
2003.
Okay, 1 second. I'm scrolling. Wow, there's a lot of notes.
Yeah.
That's pretty interesting. Oh, where are we at here? Okay, 2007. Hold on, let me scroll back up. We're at the 2003 amendments. 1 second, please. I just want to be on the same page with you, you know?
Sure.
I mean, you know, we have to read the same thing to have a conversation about it.
Sure.
Oh, hold on. 2003 amendment. Okay. Under that is subdivision C, paragraph 1.
Yeah.
Do I
and
need
it's
to keep going?
And it's quite a few paragraphs. There's a subdivision, then it says subdivision E, then it says paragraph 1.
Hold on 1 second. Subdivision C, paragraph 2. Subdivision C, you said?
Well, after that, you'll find paragraph 1. After all the subdivisions, it'll say paragraph 1.
I'm on subdivision E.
Okay, and then it says paragraph 1.
Okay.
And eventually it'll say
E1A expressly recognizes the power of a class representative to settle
okay.
class
claims. I'm just trying to walk you through the map.
Okay.
Way
okay.
down below paragraph 1, it'll say paragraph 2.
Okay, 1 second. Paragraph 2 says
this
subdivision E2.
This paragraph sets out the procedure, right?
Mm. I don't think I'm on. Okay, I'm going to save this page, but I'm going to let you talk because
okay.
I don't think. Okay, I want to hear what you have to say rather than try to
okay.
worry
yeah.
about it.
So after where it says paragraph 2, then the next paragraph after that it says, in a plaintiff class action, the court usually would appoint as class counsel only an attorney or attorneys who have sought appointment.
Oh. Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay. The rule, yeah, well, after that it says, the rule states that the court should appoint, quote, class counsel. In many instances, the applicant will be an individual attorney. In other cases, however, an entire firm or perhaps numerous attorneys who are not otherwise affiliated or otherwise collaborating on action will apply.
Okay.
So you could.
Okay.
You know,
hold on.
You could.
There's something you said that you were reading that caught my attention. Please start from the beginning of that because
yeah.
I'm gonna. I'm,
yeah.
I'm, there's something that
yeah.
I, caught my attention.
Right.
And I'm gonna tell you where the problem is.
Right. In a plaintiff class action.
In a plaintiff class action, the court usually would appoint as class counsel only an attorney or attorneys who have sought appointment.
Okay, that's it right there. The court will appoint. That's a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's problem number one with the common law right to practice law. Okay, the court will appoint. That's problem number one. Second of all, it says counsel. Everything under that, it mentions attorneys, but
mm-hmm.
before that it says counsel, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even before it says the word counsel, it says the court will appoint.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's a statutory nightmare right there.
Yeah.
Because how can if the court can appoint counsel even?
Well,
counsel, but if the court can appoint counsel,
right,
then why does it need you to bring the case?
Well, I'll guess, if you want to hear my guess, because it's for people who haven't showed up to court. It's all the classes. It's the class that will be affected by this thing. Their interests have to be represented, and they have to make sure that it's someone who's capable of doing that. And the only thing that judges know about is who's in the jury.
I appreciate that, and I use the word recognize a lot, because you have to use things the courts can recognize, right?
Yes.
you can't just
walk in there and be like,
I'm talking about things that you don't understand, right? Because
sure.
the court has to understand it, too, in order to have a meeting of the minds and therefore jurisdiction and mm-hmm. everything else, right? So,
right. But
the court
I would
can
be
appoint.
Ecstatic. Yes, I would be ecstatic if you could make up an argument why a pro se could do that instead of an attorney.
I'll tell you right here and now, I can't. And the reason why is because I never operate pro se. Never.
Uh-huh.
And you'll hear
right.
a lot of people. Look, I'm going
to
go into
something. I didn't mean to get
else.
Distracted over a word. Yes, I know what you're saying.
No, this is very important.
I don't know,
I'm sorry, Sam?
Oh, no. Keep going.
Oh, okay. It's a very important thing to get distracted over words sometimes. And this is actually one of those cases, because pro se means you are representing yourself.
Right.
The only and maybe you know this already because you brought something new to my attention that you've already studied. So maybe you're already aware of this, but the only way to challenge jurisdiction is pro per. Am I correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So
this is
a statute referring to a particular capacity of a particular individual or group of individuals to do something.
The statute does not use the term pro se. The rule here does not use the term pro se. I just threw that in. I may have chosen the wrong phrase.
Oh, okay. Well, I was.
I'm just saying that I would be very happy.
Because I'm not able to read it. I really would love for you to explain this to us because we need
right.
to learn.
I read you the key part. All I'm saying is I would be extremely happy if you could put together an argument that somebody who's not an attorney could do this.
You and me both. And I've actually delved down that rabbit hole many times.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I got into the conversation about pro per and pro se.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because the capacity is different, and only a pro per can challenge jurisdiction. Pro se cannot. Are you aware of that?
Well, if you ask me what I'm aware of, I'll tell you. It may be a little long.
I would love to hear it. I love talking to you.
So the old writings on who can challenge jurisdiction does indeed use the term impropria persona. There is no real definition of pro se. It was sort of a made up term. It's from the Latin meaning for self. It became a shorthand, but it's not really tied to the old common law or anything. It's just something shorthand that they use. So to say that a pro se does or does not have any particular characteristics or qualities, I think or even to say that it's different from proper, I don't know if you're on solid ground because it's just taking a nickname. But certainly you have to be in proper persona to challenge jurisdiction. That's fine.
I do agree with you that proper was probably a made up thing, but at the same time they still use it, right? Mm-hmm. So
right.
We need to understand how they use it. And the way they use that made-up term that they have is to basically indicate that a person is representing themselves. And I have literally stood in front of a judge, it myself, and the judge said, oh, so you're representing yourself? Because I refuse to take an attorney. And the judge says, oh, so you're representing yourself? And I told the judge, no, ma'am, I am not representing myself. I'm present. I didn't even say that. What I asked her immediately was, are you asking me to admit to a lie? That's what I asked her. Because I generally try to frame my statements to the court in questions. And now that I recall that situation, I literally asked the judge, I said, are you asking me to admit to a lie? And she said, I don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
That's mm-hmm. how that went.
Okay.
I won't get into the further details of that conversation, but she said, oh, so you're representing yourself. And I said, are you asking me to admit to a lie? And she said, I don't understand. Of course she didn't understand. She couldn't on the record.
Right.
But she knew what I was saying.
Right. You did a good thing there. I'll tell you, you got her into a confused, she might have been lying, but you got her into a confused state of mind. And then that's a receptive frame of mind. When you're confused or when you're asking questions, you're ready for the answer. It's been said that most of us in a conversation, most of the time, are not listening. We're thinking about what we're going to say. Right. So when you're in a conversation with somebody, right, they're not listening to you. They're thinking about themselves. So how do you break that logjam and get your idea into their head? You get them to ask a question.
Or you ask them a question.
Okay, but you see what I'm saying here. If you can get someone to ask a question, you've changed their mindset. You've changed their frame of mind. They're now receptive instead of thinking about what they're going to say.
Right, right.
And you did that.
And when we're dealing with criminal cases, one of the things we want to do as a just from a strategic point, not necessarily from any other aspect, mm-hmm. but just from a strategic point, we want the prosecutor, we want the judge asking themselves questions.
Okay.
Right? Instead of asking us questions. Right? So
okay. Right.
So from a tactical point of view, every time they respond or make a statement to anything, you always phrase your answer as a question. Because if you use logic and common sense, you'll get them asking themselves the question. Or they'll at least ask themselves some other question. And you're right, that would confuse them. And then they'd have to think about it before they could logically or reasonably answer.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when we're dealing with judges, that's a good tactic.
I've heard a rule, never make a statement, always ask a question. And there's another practical reason for that, is because you're speaking a language that you don't fully understand, that you don't fully know. You're speaking legalese.
And what you think is a term that you think you know the definition, they're using some statutory definition somewhere you've never heard of.
Right.
So
right.
What do you do when you're speaking a language you don't know? Well, you avoid making any statements because then you can't be wrong.
Well, there's this old principle I live by, and it's the same thing you're saying, but I think I'm going to say it in a different fashion so that other listeners can understand and comprehend it. Okay? Everybody knows that anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law, right? Anybody that's ever watched a TV show where there's cops and, you know, robbers and whatever, they all know that. Everything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. Okay. So you don't say anything. Now, here's a counterpoint to that. And I hate using the word sovereign. I really despise it. But I will express this in a certain form, and I may use the word sovereign to explain it. If you're not making any statements in court, you're sovereign. And the reason I'm saying that is because if you take the word as, you look at the word as, A-S, as, means in some form, it means in the capacity of. When you take the word king, you can generalize that as the sovereign. So when you're as king questions, you're always in the capacity of the sovereign because you are not stating anything. You're not making any claims. You're not taking any positions that you need to defend. You're simply in the capacity of the sovereign. What would you do to solve this problem, right? So as king questions, as opposed to making statements, may means possibly the sovereign, right? I'm possibly am the sovereign, but if I'm as king, I'm in the capacity of the sovereign, right? So never make statements, always ask questions, because if you ask the right questions in the right format with the proper words, you can make things happen. Like, you always form your response in the form of a question. And that leads back to what you were saying, because when you do that, it leads the prosecutor to ask himself questions. It leads the judges to ask themselves questions, right? Like, you're right. You're absolutely right in that form of thought. I absolutely agree with you there. And I really hope that you and I can have some further conversations. I appreciate what you brought to my attention tonight. I had a thought process that may or may not work.
All right.
And you brought something. Either way, this petition is going to create problems. But
yeah. Now they might another thing. They might answer with something non-responsive. They might say, "Oh, we don't have to answer that because of sovereign immunity or some dang thing."
Well, okay. Honestly, if somebody said that to me, I would be like, "Oh, you're sovereign? Prove it. You just claimed to be sovereign over me. So now you have to prove your sovereignty because you made the claim that you had some. So now you have to prove it. And if you can't prove it, then you have no immunity, period. And you better prove it, because I don't play with immunity.
Yes, and you,
I'll
when
give
you're asking
you the
for
immunity
proof,
you deserve, but if you don't have, if you can't prove it, you don't have any.
Right. You can ask for that in. You can be more specific. You can say, "Show me the signed document that puts you in the office that you're claiming." Somebody, you know, somebody, the governor or somebody signed a document says, "I'm appointing this person to be prosecutor," and or the. Who would that be? Who appoints
the attorney general? Generally, it's the attorney general.
Okay, or they might be locally elected, and then it would be just, you know, the elections official.
There's still even if they're locally elected, they're still under the authority of the attorney general, as far as I know.
Okay, so there's a signed document. If your opponent here is John Smith, then there's a signed document somewhere that says John Smith now has the office of the prosecutor. Okay, so who signed that document? Okay, now I have the same question. Were they properly in office? I want to see the document.
Was your question?
So once we have a signed document that makes this John Smith a prosecutor. Well, now we look at who signed the document. Maybe it was Fred Jones, and Fred Jones signed as Secretary of State or as Attorney General. Okay, I want to see the signed document that made Fred Jones the Attorney General. And there'll be another document. Okay, that was signed by somebody. You see the pattern here? It's a chain. I want to follow this chain back. Where does it end? It should go back to the state constitution or the federal constitution, because I don't know where else it would go back to. Where does the chain of authority start?
I agree with you. However, I'm going to tell you this. Most people will never understand how to enforce that.
Okay.
Do you get what I'm saying? I mean, I agree with you. I absolutely agree with you. But when you're talking about, like, people you're just trying to help off the street, They're never gonna be able to figure out how to work that.
Right, you'd have to prepare the paperwork for them.
Right. Well, what I do is try to make things way simpler. And I'm not arguing your point. I am absolutely in agreement with you, with your point. But how do you take that point and simplify it to an extent that everybody can use it?
Well, yeah, that may be more asking more than can be done. I wouldn't do it that way. I'd say here's a do-it-yourself template document. You just fill in your name here and fill in that, something like that. There's more to your question, how to enforce it. You'd use discovery, and if they don't come along, then you have a motion to compel discovery, and all that's complicated.
Brother, I have a butt ton of questions.
Okay.
Questions. Not for you, but questions that I've already contemplated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, first of all, you get dragged into court. Okay, I don't know. There's a million questions you could ask that are valid and relevant. Here's one. Is there anyone here under any legally enforced? I've thought about my words, and I've simplified my questions. So when I'm presenting them to you, they're in very simple format. Here's one. Is there anyone here under any legally enforceable obligation to recognize and protect my rights?
Right.
Do you think they're going to answer? Who's going to answer that one? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if the answer is not a yes, then I'm in the wrong court.
I know someone who said to a judge, "You have a right-hand relationship with the law." And the judge got very flustered.
That's good. I think the person that asked that question knew the judge. Honestly, that's my opinion. Because that is a very simple question. But it's very complicated as well, because that involves Masonic ritualism, canon law, and ecclesiastical law all at the same time. That one question involves three very complicated issues. Like, it's a very simple question that nobody else would understand in the courtroom, but the judge would understand one of those three things and would be scared of all of them. That's my opinion. But, I mean, you're even that person that asked that question, I mean, nobody would ask a question like that unless they already knew all that. No regular person is going to walk into court and go, do you understand, are you on the right-hand side of the law? Like, nobody's going to phrase a question like that. That's somebody that knows what they're doing. Nobody, no regular person would, and that's, that's very, actually, I'm really impressed with that. That's pretty slick, dude. That's pretty slick. But no regular person would be able to ask that question and understand what the answer would allow them to do. Like, we have to bring these things down to a basic level where everybody understands what they're doing and why.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's something that I've contemplated for a long time, and these are the questions I would ask, because this is what any normal person on the street would do, right? If I walk up to you, or let's put this the other way around. You walk up to me on the street, and you say, you pull out a gun, and you say, you owe me $50,000. Okay. Here's how I would react to that. And I believe that you may understand the concept of reasonable man. So here's how I would react to that. With these three questions, who are you? What do you want from me? And why do you think I owe it to you?
Okay.
And I think these three basic common sense, logical English questions would make sense in any aspect of life. Who are you? What do you want from me? And why do you think I owe it to you? There's nothing in any of those questions that indicates any legal or commercial concept to what the reality is. Who are you? Pretty basic question. What do you want from me? That's a pretty basic question. Why do you think I owe it to you? That's a pretty basic question. These are very basic, common sense, logical English words that everybody understands when put in those forms. Who are you? What do you want from me? And why do you think I owe it to you? Now, let me explain to you why I would ask those three questions in that order. Who are you? Well, first of all, I mean, if you won't tell me who you are, then you're burnt. You're just burnt. I mean, you just, nothing else matters. Who are you? Now, you can say, I'm a bookie, right? I'm a bookie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
maybe you're a gambling man. Who knows? I don't know. But if the guy says if you're a gambling man and the guy says I'm a bookie, then you would pay attention. You'd be like, shit, do I owe this guy money? I don't know. You know, but we have a common concept. He's a bookie and I'm a gambler, right? Okay.
Can
so,
I interrupt?
Yes, please.
About the concept of who, what is the kind of answer, what is a satisfactory answer to the question of who? There's a Steve Martin movie where Steve Martin's character goes into an office
and he wants something. And the secretary says, who are you? And he says, oh, I'm Freda's boss. Oh, okay. And so she gives him whatever he wants, and he's on the way out of the office, and she says, who's Freda? He turns, she turns and he says, Freda's my secretary.
Yep.
So he had a who in a connection with his relationship with himself. And that's the joke. What you expect when you ask the question is who is how you're related to me. So if you, the who are you? Well, I'm the guy that loaned you $50,000 last week. I'm the guy that whose car you ran over last week. I'm the guy you hit with your golf club last week. So it's
right.
The connection to you is the who. That's what a who is.
Yes, absolutely.
So if I'm a bookie, okay, that's part of who, but how is that bookie related to you? Or if you said I'm Joe. Okay,
well, that actually leads into the second question. What do you want from me? See
yes.
now that actually bypasses the second question and answers the third question. Why do you think I owe it to you? Okay, so
mm-hmm.
we can skip from the first question to the third question because the guy says, I'm a bookie, and you know
right.
you're a gambler, right?
Okay.
So you know you're a gambler, right? If you're a gambler, you know it. Okay, so it's fine. You know who you are, and this guy says, I'm a bookie. We can skip to the third question. Why do you think I owe it to you?
Mm-hmm.
Because maybe that guy has to explain that his name is Bob and you owe Joe $40,000 because Joe is your guy, right? But you don't know Bob. Bob just shows up at your door. He says you owe Joe $40,000. Okay. How does that mean I owe you? Well, I bought your debt from Bob. Okay, fair enough. Then I owe you $40,000 as long as I can verify it with Bob that you bought my debt from Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's a million questions in between. Who are you? Now, let's put this into a civil situation instead of a criminal one. Okay. Mm-hmm. Some guy says you owe him 50 grand. And who are you? I'm Bob Smith. What do I owe you? Or what was the second question? I forgot. I've been doing this so long I forgot. So who are you? What do you want? What do you want? That was the second question. So the first question is, who are you? He says, I'm Bob. You owe me $50,000. And you say, well, what do you want? You say, he says, I want 50 grand. Why do you think I owe it to you? Okay. So in this situation, say Bob's your neighbor. And while you were on vacation in the Bahamas, a storm came through and blew a tree that was on your yard down through his fence, and he wants $50,000 to replace the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so do you give him the $50,000? Just give it to him because you don't care. You're a millionaire. You know, just for kicks and grins. So you give him the $50,000. What does the third question matter?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think I owe it to you is irrelevant if I just paid you. I don't care why I owe it to you. I just gave it to you. Now what's the problem? There's no problem. There's no future problem. Who are you? What do you want from me? I'm Bob. I want $50,000 from you. Okay. Here's 50 grand. Why do I care why I owe it to you? I just gave it to you. Now I just settled the issue. It doesn't matter.
Sure.
Like, you're my neighbor. You say I owe you 50 grand. Okay. I gave you the $50,000. So why do I care why I owe it to you? I just gave it to you. I just gave it to you.
Okay.
Gave it to you.
All right.
Okay. So I don't need to worry about why. We just settled the problem. Now, consider this in a criminal aspect, the criminal courts. Who are you? I'm the prosecutor. What do you want from me? I want $20,000 or 10 years in prison. Okay, I gave you $20,000. Does it matter why? At that point, it doesn't. It doesn't matter. I just gave it to you. There's the commercial aspect, which can be settled. The commercial aspect can be settled on the second question without any result on the third question. We don't need to argue. I just gave it to you. What is commerce? Commerce is prejudicial, right? Meaning prejudicial. So if the state, whatever that is, claims that I owe them something, then let me just pay you. I don't care. That's where you get into the IRS forms and all that stuff, and I can't go there because I've been doing this 12, 13 years, and
I had the impression that when a prosecutor comes into your life, he will start by saying, you did this.
Yeah, well, that's hearsay. It's always hearsay.
I know, but notice what I did not say. I did not say he starts by saying, I want $50,000. He starts by saying, you did this.
Okay. Good point. Really? Did I? And who cares if I did or didn't? I'm not going to argue whether I did or didn't do it. Personally, I almost always did it. I'm not going to argue those facts. Shit, yeah, I did it. So what? I'm not going to argue whether I did or didn't do it. I absolutely did it. I did it. I did that thing. Yeah. So what do you want? You see where I'm going with that? Why argue the facts? If you're arguing the facts, you're in dishonor on a commercial level, which is prejudicial. So, I did it. So what? Did that cause you a problem? And if it did, then what do you want for it? I'm gonna let you go. And honestly, I hope we, just for a second, because I'm pretty sure Sam needs to go to commercial break again.
Okay, well, one more thing.
But I would love to get back on the phone with you afterwards.
Yeah.
If we can't, I hope you get my email address from Sam, because I would love to continue this conversation.
Yeah.
You are a good man, and you have good points. And I love talking to you. So hopefully
one
we can do this in a few minutes.
In a few minutes, okay. Yeah, I was going to mention the attorney contract.
Yeah,
the attorney contract.
Commercial break.
All right.
Sam needs to pay for the show, so.
All right.
Let's let her do that. Sam, are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
Alrighty. Well, we will go for a quick commercial break, and then we'll be right back. 2 minutes, guys. We'll be right back.
Okay.
Freaks, outsiders, weirdos, the wallflowers, oddball loser, fish out of water, speak up, talk quieter. We are different. There's no arguing. It's a fact. A patchwork of flawed, we grow and adapt. We're funky, unconventional, see life through kaleidoscope eyes. In a field full of clovers, with our four leaves, we bask in blue skies. Flaws are natural. Our imperfections, our weaknesses, our scars. There is a misfit in all of us. We just have to be brave enough to embrace who we are.
Food waste is one of the most easily solvable problems, literally the low-hanging fruit of environmentalism. Pardon the pun, it's my job.
About 20% of all produce never makes it off the farm.
It's because they just look a little funny,
a little weird, but when you cut into it, it's perfectly good food.
It's just a total shame. It's totally good stuff.
We buy ugly produce directly from farms that often would go to waste because supermarkets won't buy it because of how it looks, and we deliver it to people's doors.
Beauty standards for an apple.
This isn't that ugly at all. Like, that's the most common first box, like, complaint we get.
We change that. We educate people. We show them how amazing these fruits and vegetables are.
Have food delivered to your house.
Box of produce every week.
And it's more affordable.
At a very reasonable price.
Cheaper than the grocery store.
I spend a lot less time in grocery stores. It's an adventure every time that you open your box.
High quality produce.
There's nothing wrong with the produce.
And they taste exactly the same, if not better.
Save those fruits and vegetables that get wasted every year.
And it's delivered to your door, like,
but what? Why wouldn't you do?
Please go to our website, freedomizerradio.live, and sign up for Imperfect Foods today. Use our promo code and get money off your first order. Go ahead and get some organic and all-natural meats, dairy, snacks, breads, and non-GMO produce.
Hey, everyone. Proof here. Just wanted to ask you guys, are you guys tired of all the mask ordinances that are passing all over the place with people telling you that you're not allowed to buy and sell unless you have a piece of fabric over your face? Well, we sure are tired of it. Please check out realbarefaceislegal.org and help us get together to fight these mask ordinances. You can also find Bareface Is Legal on Facebook, either as a group or a business page. Anyway, help us fight back against these stupid mask mandates. RealBarefaceIsLegal.org.
Most people say they hate wearing shoes and would go barefoot if they knew they were allowed. People say it all the time on their social medias, but they are worried that someone will say something to them. So everyone wears the cheapest flip-flops with the least amount of fabric on them. Most people do not even know that it's completely 100% legal to go barefoot into a store. Most people think that driving barefoot is illegal, but it isn't. Driving barefoot actually is safer than wearing most shoes. Going outside barefoot for a walk is one of the healthiest things you could do, but most people are afraid someone will say something. Or they quote the myths and the rumors that their grandma told them years ago. The fact is, there are no laws against driving a car, going to a store, or eating in a restaurant barefoot. So don't give in to bad fashion, hurt heels, or a broken flip-flop. For more information, please check out barefootislegal.org or find us on your favorite social media.
Hello, everybody. This is Sam, host of Open World, formerly known as Against the Grain, and we have been sitting here with Pixie chatting about criminal cases, and we've had Rod come on and the discussion. I'm just sitting here listening at this point because this is getting really, really interesting, so I'm going to let you two fellas continue the conversation. I'm just, like, sitting here. I'm just, like, it's like I'm taking notes at this point already. It's like I just love these kinds of conversations. Well, I don't really have a whole lot to contribute because I'm not really, like, up there when that comes to that kind of knowledge. Like, I'm there, but it's like it's a lot harder for me to discuss those kind of things. At this point, I'm just sitting here just like, you know, popcorn. I'm just like, holy smokes, this is really intense. This is an intense in a good way. Can I just say how much I love listening to you two fellas have a discussion and how, like, respectful you are? Because, like, 99.9% of the time when I'm listening to these kinds of conversations from, like, men, women, it doesn't matter. Like, it usually ends up in total, like, nonsense fighting. So this has been really interesting, and I'm just loving listening to you guys discuss these kinds of things. It's so civil, and it's so informed, and it's so just, I'm just loving this. So anyway, you guys are both unmuted here, so you can keep having a conversation, because I'm all for this. I'm just like, woo. I'm listening.
Well, Sam, from my point of view, I got to say, you know, this wouldn't happen without you. I mean, I appreciate just being able to be on your show, and honestly, I actually appreciate your caller tying in, because this is a conversation that means a lot. I'm learning some things too. But this couldn't happen without you. So if you guys, you know, just listen in and support Sam, and I appreciate you, Sam. I love you more than anything.
Love you too, bud. Love you too. I know Rod had a question or something or comment before we cut out for commercial. Did you want to ask that?
Yes, you will be interested in the attorney contract method. It is a method for dealing with a criminal case. And
okay.
I wrote a book about that, and Sam has a copy, a little short book.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it from Sam, the attorney contract method.
Okay.
The basic idea is, Judge, I do not want a public defender. I'm not asking for a public defender. I'm going to hire a private attorney, but I will need 2 weeks to find one. Okay. So then you make phone calls and you say, Dear Mr. Attorney, number one, I want you to hire you for this criminal case, and I want to write into our contract that you will agree to protect all of my constitutional rights, including all the ones I don't know about.
Right.
And for that, and the attorney number one will say, oh, sorry, I can't take you. Okay, so you make a note, you check them off on the list. And, Dear attorney number two, I would like to hire you, but I want to put in a contract. Oh, sorry, I can't help you. Okay, so at the end of the 2 weeks, Your Honor, here's a list of all the attorneys I contacted, but nobody will take my case. I need another 2 weeks. Oh, okay. Your attorney number 15. And it goes on for that. I knew a guy who did that for a year. Was it 2 years? I think it was 1 year, almost a year. This fellow in California had been stopped, and he was coming back from target practice, and he had his gun locked in the trunk, as required by California law. And the sheriff said, oh, yeah, concealed weapon. So he was charged with concealed weapon. And so he did this, just trying to find an attorney for most of a year. And finally the judge said, the case is dismissed, but it's not for the reasons you think it is. Which gave us a kind of laugh. I know somebody else who did that on appeal. She was convicted of, somebody was being chased by the police, a felon, being chased by the police, and he ran into this, the side door of this duplex, and he went up into the attic, and it's not clear.
Let me interrupt you. My apologies. I don't like interrupting people, but that's an interesting concept. But
the point is right. So he hid in this attic, and they brought out the tear gas, and they tear gassed the place. They finally caught him, and they charged this lady who had been asleep in the bedroom with harboring him. And then somehow they convicted her of that. But then on appeal, she did this. Oh, for my appeal, I need to hire an attorney. And that went on. And finally, the case simply vanished, as I recall. The case just vanished.
Right, because you'll never get an attorney that'll agree to those terms.
Right, and there's
it's the basic concept of I'll accept a public defender as long as he agrees to be a surety on my case.
Yes, you cannot have a public defender assigned you against your will. You have to ask for one. I think that's in the statute. I'm not sure.
Well, you can hire a lawyer, but it's the same principle. I'll hire you as long as you agree to be a surety on my case. They won't ever agree to be a surety. And nobody's ever going to, even a public defender or a hired attorney, they'll never agree to be a surety on your case. And the reason why is because they're not going to accept the liability that you're accepting, right, as a defendant, right? And so you can kind of turn that back in the prosecutor's face as the same thing. Are you agreeing to be a surety for your client, for the plaintiff state? Like, I mean, I get that principle. But there's 100 ways to go about it. It's the same thing as like asking the prosecutor to be a surety for his client. The prosecutor only ever has one client. They don't see this is the difference between a defense attorney and a prosecutor in a criminal case. In a criminal case, the defense attorney has his client, right? But he's never going to be a surety for his client.
Mm-hmm.
He's never going to agree to take a liability for screwing up the case for his client. But the same reigns true on the other side, right? This is the balance of scales, right? This is the settlement of the account. Where's the liability? If the prosecutor is not willing to accept full liability for his client being wrong, the state, then there's mm-hmm. no case. There's no balance of justice. Am I wrong?
You have a stalemate. Right. So you have a stalemate where the court cannot proceed unless you know, because it would be too unfair, and they cannot force you to go alone without an attorney, and they cannot force an attorney on you. Cannot force an attorney to agree your term.
Look, it's a case, okay? Say an indictment gets issued, right, by a grand jury. What does it say on the indictment? It says it's a true bill. And mm-hmm. a true bill that has charges, right? It's all commercial when it boils down to it. Like, if people can't understand that commercial aspect of it, this is where we need to help them, because most people don't understand the commercial aspects of the case. But the fact of the matter is, an indictment is a true bill. And that true bill, signed by the grand jury foreperson, has charges on it. It's all commercial. So who's holding the liability? You're the one holding the liability. If you allow yourself to be the defendant, you're the one holding a liability on one end, right? Okay, but there can't be a balancing of the books. There can't be an adjustment of the account or a settlement of charges or anything unless there's somebody holding a liability on the other end. That would be the prosecutor, judges, the plaintiff, the state, and the people they pay. Somebody has to be liable on the other side. If there's no liability on the other side, it's automatically an unjust, unfair, ridiculous contemplation of settlement of account.
Mm-hmm.
That's the end of it. I mean, really, that's just the end of it. Somebody has to hold liability on both sides. Otherwise, there can never be a settlement of account. And if you're holding all the liability and nobody else is holding any liability, then there's no way to settle the account. There's no way. It's impossible. And the law does not contemplate the impossible. And now we're getting into equity and all kinds of other stuff, but that's the basic principle of it, is why are you holding all the liability and nobody else is? Why is it that we're the only ones responsible? I'm responsible, but you're not? I mean, really? If you're not responsible, then why should I be responsible? Especially since I'm one of the people, which has never been legally defined. But we know what position they're in. We don't know what the people are legally, but we know that they're first for sure.
Well, the word people is related to the word public, because if you know Grimm's Law, you remember the Brothers Grimm,
collected fairy tales. The older brother was also a student of language and he gave us Grimm's Law, which talks about how vowels and consonants change from one language to the next. So people, k-f-o, public, k-b-o, very similar. So those words have a common root. I found a case that says the public is an undifferentiated mass. I think that's in, it's either amjur or words and phrases. I looked that up a long time ago. An undifferentiated mass is the public. Take that for what it's worth.
I'm about 3 days away from getting access to Westlaw's amjur.
Yeah, I used to hang out at the library.
I can't wait to do that because I'm not paying for it. Somebody else is, but we're trying to access this on two different platforms and not get him screwed over.
Right.
Hey Sam, I'm sincerely apologetic, but at the moment I have to leave the call because my mom is texting me, and
okay.
I have to deal with some family issues. I don't know who I'm talking to, but if you can contact Sam,
sure.
Can you contact Sam and get my email address?
Sure.
Yeah. This is my friend
okay.
Rod. We talk. I mean, we don't talk as much as I would like
okay,
to because
good.
I'm so damn busy,
love...
but we talk. So I can get you the
yeah.
info.
Good. I would love to keep talking with you, brother. I mean, you brought some things to my attention. I'm pretty sure I brought some thoughts to yours. And I would love to continue having a conversation with you over email.
Sure.
So if we can stay in touch, I would really appreciate that. I mean that.
All right.
You know, I don't know everything, brother, and neither do you.
Right.
So I would
right.
love to work together with you.
Maybe we can fool our ignorance.
Yeah. I like that. I like that a lot. Unfortunately, I have to leave the call because I really have to get a hold of my mom.
Okay.
Sam, thank you so much for letting me be back on your show. And caller, I just got a message from Sam. I think we'll be able to touch base soon, and I would love to keep talking to you. I really
All
would.
Right.
I mean, you brought a lot of things to my attention tonight. And I think I've brought a lot of things to your attention, and I think that the two of us can figure out a way to stay outside the box. So I would like to keep talking to you. Sam, thank you so much for letting me be on your show tonight. I love you so much.
Love you, too.
All right, I got to go.
All right, have fun.
All right, bye.
Hey, bye. Well, I don't know about
no.
you, Rod, but you're probably just like, I know a bunch of this shit, but I'm just like, damn. Damn.
Yeah.
That's just, every time I get on these kinds of calls, it's just like, oh. That's why this is
yeah.
recorded, so I can go and listen to this another 10 times. That's why.
Yeah. I didn't get to the de facto officer doctrine that says if you're going to question whether someone's properly in office, you have to do it before otherwise engaging with them. So if you say, on the side of the road, oh, yes, officer, and then later in court you say, well, I don't think he was really a policeman. Oh, too late. You already said officer.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was an actual case where that happened. So the de facto officer doctrine is if someone is not properly in office but they're de facto, they're acting like they're in office, then you don't get to question that after unless you do it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to do that thing, like I was saying, I want to see the document that put you in office, and then I want whoever signed that, I want to see the document that put them in office, and I want to see the complete chain of documents. You have to begin by saying, are you properly in office?
Mm-hmm.
The first time you meet them.
Hmm.
Yeah.
This is all just so interesting.
Yeah. Was there anything else that we talked about that sparked your curiosity? I mean, specifically, you can think
not
of
at the moment. I'm just kind of sitting, like, not going to lie, but I'm just kind of sitting here mulling over. And just kind of like I said, like, I know, how do I explain this? Like, I've heard this stuff, like, before. So it's like, it's all familiar, but it's like, I feel like, I don't know how to explain it. I feel like, you know, when you understand like an entirely other language and like you can understand everything they're saying, but you can't like actually physically speak the language because it's just confusing. I feel that's where I'm at. It's like, I feel like I'm sitting here listening to French or something and I can understand what they're saying, but I can't really contribute because I don't really know as much as I should. If that makes sense. I probably told you this before, but it's just like, man, but no, there's not really a whole lot that's piquing my interest at the moment, other than I'm kind of curious, like, I really want to hear how these things go. When in terms of his court case and getting those things going, but I mean, like you guys are saying, like, it might seem like a class action might not be possible, but there might be strings one could pull in order to make it possible, but that would probably take some research in order to get that done. So
I would, he did say he hadn't thought about class action until tonight. It may be
tonight.
That it would be satisfactory. It may be that it would be satisfactory to just have an action on the for the benefit of the two litigants who are actually there. You don't need a class action. You don't need to protect the rest of the world. A class action is about others who are similarly situated. Right? You don't need to, you know, you don't really
like,
need to do that.
Couldn't they, like, because, like, a class action is, like, when a whole bunch of people get in on it, but, like, wouldn't they just be able to file a suit, just like a joint suit together, rather than just going a full-blown class action? Because, like, like, outside of the fact that it's a lot bigger, it's a lot this, it's a lot that, it's going to take, like, a lot more money. It's just, like, at the same time, you know, it's easier to fight with a class action because everybody can contribute. But at the same time, when it comes to the winnings, you all get to split it. And depending on how much winnings you get, it's almost like, I feel like it's almost better to just go kind of solo if you can make it happen, or with like a very small group of people. But like, what's the limited number? Like, is there a number that it has to be in order for it to be a class action?
There might be. I just earlier today ran down some of the rules. I don't think there's anything about the number of them, but the thing is that they're trying to protect the rights. The judge has to worry about protecting the rights of people who aren't there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that changes the flavor of the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, because, like, okay, because, like, class action is, like, if people aren't there and they're being represented, but they're not there. But, like, ideally, one would think that you would want the people that are actually involved to be there. Like,
okay,
I've been listening to a lot of, like, Judge Judy and stuff this last little while, just when I'm, like, doing a little bit of yard work or, like, you know, cleaning the house or whatever, I'm just, like, toss on some Judge Judy because why not? And, like, you know, that's, like, the one thing that every time they're talking about, I mean, this is just me, like, being dumb here, but it's just, like, you know, just, like, every time, like, you know, they talk about something going on, it's always, like, hearsay, hearsay, hearsay. So unless they were, like, actually there, like, you know, Pixie was saying, like, last week that it's just, like, you know, you actually have to be there, otherwise you really have no case because it's all hearsay. So, like, he was talking about, like, police reports and things, and, like, if you're not actually there, you don't really have a case because, you know, the police are just going off of what they were told. So it's not like, you know, the affidavit isn't really actually valid if you're not even actually there. So it's like, you would think that instead of doing like a class action and just representing a bunch of people who aren't actually there, like, get all those people in the room that were actually there, like, would it still be a class action then? Or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, we're talking about two things. One is who's the witnesses, and the other is who's the damaged parties. So the witnesses, there's, again, two different issues. One of them is that they have to have personal knowledge, otherwise they're not a witness. And in the affidavits, they're supposed to say, I have personal knowledge. And they're supposed to say how they got their personal knowledge. Otherwise it's hearsay. I forgot what else. There's another issue about witnesses. And, right, so the damaged parties have to be identified, but if they are represented, it doesn't, by a lawyer, it doesn't matter really if they're there in the courtroom or not, but they should have a relationship with the attorney. So that's why class actions are a little bit like held to a higher standard, because the attorney has to represent people who he's never even met or heard of.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're supposed to send mail out and all that. Yeah, so the class, I'm looking at the rule again, it says the class is so numerous that joinder of all members is impracticable. So joinder is when they would actually name them all in the caption. Questions of common law. Claims of the representative parties are typical of the claims or defenses of the class. So, for example, Julia Roberts, what was the name of the Erin Brockovich. She had a class action suit on behalf of all the people who drank water from this polluted place. And that's a lot of people. And one of them was poisoned, and they're all poisoned. It's the similar claims and defenses. So one of them is they're all similarly situated. So the representative parties will fairly and adequately protect the interests of the class. So you've got to have an attorney who will do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So witnesses, everything has to be sworn. And so if there's an item, you know, as someone put it, the prosecutor doesn't just throw a gun onto the table and say, okay, there's the murder weapon. They have to have a witness to say, okay, who are you? How are you related to this? What did you see? Okay, now do you recognize this thing? What is it? Okay, and then he says, I move this thing into evidence as exhibit B or whatever it is. And then that's a motion. I read about a case where the prosecutor forgot to say, I move this thing into evidence, and the judge didn't, you know. They're not supposed to take sides. If they help one side, they have to help the other side, and where does that end? So he just kept his mouth shut, and the thing wasn't part of the evidence. Oops. So, yeah.
Interesting.
So I have heard of David Wynn Miller. My father bought his package a long time ago, and he could not understand it was too advanced for him. So I didn't get my money's worth. Well, I guess you didn't. David Miller had, on the plus side, he approached the English language from his own perspective. On the minus side, I don't agree with his conclusions. He said, for example, you can read things back, a sentence backward, and get more information about it. If you have a sentence like, the sky is blue, is that true or false? Well, if you're in the half of the planet where it's night, it's not true, the sky is black. And if you're where it's fogged over, the sky is white. And in other places, the sky is blue. So it depends on where you are. Now, if you read the sentence backward, the sky is blue, blue is sky, the. Do you get any more information about the truth or falsity of the sentence? Well, no, because it all depends on where you are. If it's forwards or backwards, it doesn't matter. And yet he thinks you can get an idea of the truth of the statement by reading it backwards. And I don't agree with that at all. So the Wikipedia says he died in 2018. Oh, I looked up that advertised realbarefaceislegal.org.
Yeah.
If I got it right, it says it's available on GoDaddy Auctions. There's no website.
Okay, then I'll have to let Proof know to, because, that was at the beginning of all that scam stuff, the mass scam, whatever you want to call it. I remember Proof had started, because he's been running Barefoot is Legal for a long time already, and like Proof has like 10,000 members. They're looking to expand the website, expand memberships, and they're starting to really kind of take it next level. And they had started that Barefoot is Legal when all this first started, and I'll have to run it by him and let him know that the website is down. But that was a huge thing, and they kept, like, kicking his group off of Facebook and everything. I know he had moved it to Telegram for a while, but, like, he had like 10,000 members in that Facebook group in a matter of just like under a month. It was insane. The amount of people that were joining because they knew all of this was nonsense. They didn't want to do this. And like, yeah, I think Facebook had shut it down like 3 times and he kept restarting it. It was just wild. It was absolutely wild.
Okay. Well, looking on DuckDuckGo, I do see a Facebook page, Bareface is legal, and I do see a Facebook page, Barefoot is legal. And I see a barefootislegal.org, but that goes to a it goes to a different link. It's Google Play Tinder dating app. So what's going on there, I'm not sure. And that's Barefoot is legal without the real. Anyway, so yeah, just tell them to double check. Make sure it's all current. So David Miller, right, he has his own analysis of the English language. And he bragged about once when he was in court and the courtroom was filled with attorneys. Well, that means that what he's saying is intriguing. By the way, attorneys have a kind of a boring job. When something like this comes along, they're all interested. But it doesn't mean he's right. It doesn't mean they agree with him. But it does mean that he's got something people are interested in. So yeah, he called himself an English teacher. So I can't say anything else without being detailed, and I can't be detailed because I don't remember what I learned other than that. Would you like a different subject?
Sure, why not? We've got about 20 minutes left, so we can just kind of chit-chat and...
Yeah, well, I've got a list of...
Let's hit it up.
There's a website, Wait But Why, and he writes about a bunch of things, and one of them is The Cook and the Chef, Elon Musk's Secret Sauce. And he interviewed Musk and his staff at Musk's invitation because Musk liked his column. And said, how would you like to write an article about me? So he wrote a series, and part of it is about why Musk is doing what he's doing, and the final entry in the series is why and how he is able to do what he's doing. And it's all very interesting. And I'll get to that in a moment. And I want to put that together with Wallace Wattles wrote a book in 1910 called The Science of Getting Rich, which is based on some old Hindu ideas about the universe is made of a thinking substance, and all you need to do is think of a thing, and it will start to be formed. Stuart Lichtman, I mentioned before, he's an MIT grad. He wrote How to Get Lots of Money for Anything Fast, which really ought to be called How to Communicate with Your Unconscious to Get Things Done. Jose Silva created these what he called Silva Mind Control a long time ago. Now the mind control, that doesn't sound right, so he changed it to the Silva Method. And it's basically hypnosis or self-hypnosis where you relax and you put yourself in a suggestible state and then you make good suggestions to yourself. They like to use that for remote healing. I don't think they've kept track of the results. Harry Lorraine was a memory expert on stage. He wrote The Memory Book. There's a sequel, The Page a Minute Memory Book. And he talks about traditional methods that go back to the ancient Greeks of association and things like how to organize your memory to remember things. There's a thing called Emotional Freedom Technique, which is tapping. So you tap on, they started with acupuncture points. And then they discover it doesn't matter where you tap. What matters is you just have this repetitive sensory input, which sort of distracts your brain or does something like that, plus affirmations. And they have a thing called borrowing benefits where you don't need to – it's almost Freudian. You start with a trauma and you think about when it happened and then you try to do something about that. And then, of course, nobody wants to revisit the traumas because then you're traumatized again. So they say, okay, here's – just watch somebody else revisiting their traumas. And you can get some benefit out of that. They call that borrowing benefits. And, of course, there's the famous Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi, who wrote about the flow state. And it seems that that's one of a spectrum of transcendent states, although nobody has said what the difference between one member of the spectrum and another.
But in the flow state, your frontal lobes or your temporal lobes are diminished, so you're not thinking of it. You're not using your critical thinking. Your sense of time expands or contracts. Usually it seems like, you know, you're working in and so it's the sense of time is flying by. But it could be the other way around. In a car accident, everything happens in slow motion because you're memorizing all this experience rapidly, and it seems like it's happening very slowly. Okay, whether that's the flow state or not, I don't know, in a car crash. Another thing that happens is your sense of self vanishes. Your sense of self also is one of the things that your frontal lobes do, apparently. So you have a feeling of oneness. And there's fellow studied Buddhist monks and Christian nuns. They've been meditating for 20 years. Okay, so how do you do it?
You keep cutting out, and it sounds like you're going, like, far
I'm
away.
Sorry.
You'll just, like, it'll be like, oh, no, it's not your fault. I think it's the phone or something, because it'll be perfectly fine. All of a sudden, it'll sound, like, super, 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 super far away. And then it'll be, like,
well,
right back
yeah.
after, like, two words.
Right. Well, I sat up differently to fiddle with the computer, and I moved my phone. Right. So this fellow studied Buddhist monks that have been meditating for 20 years, and he maybe hooked them up to brain machines to record their thing or whatever. And they studied Christian nuns in the same way. And he had to break with psychologists. The William James is the founder of is the father of American psychology. He's the founder of the psychology department at Harvard University. He wrote books. Somebody says, if you think you've got a new idea, Henry James got there first. I'm sorry, William. William James got there first. So, he wrote a book in 1890. He was interested in improving in if you got your psychology, your normal psychology, let's make it better. And then Freud came along and said, no, we're not interested in getting better. We're only interested in getting well. We're only interested in the sick. Are you sick or not? If you're sick, I'm going to stop being sick. But if you're well, let's just leave you alone. And so psychology went with that. And then sometime in the 70s, maybe 90s, something like that, somebody was courageous enough to buck the tide and say, maybe we should look at getting better. And this whole flow state and the idea of bettering yourself with psychology became perspective. So this study of Buddhist monks was a break with the past. And so this other guy had heard about him, and he said, well, I've been studying surfers. And surfers, you know, concentrate on the next wind. You can't be thinking about what your grandmother told you or an argument you had last week or something. You have to be focused your attention on the wave. And when they do that, they get into this flow state, and they have a feeling of oneness with the wave, which is silly to bring up to a psychology conference or something. What do you mean you feel oneness with wave? But they report that. They all report that, and so they have to take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
So they look at what the brain, again, they look at brain scans and what could be going on, and it's another the sense of self is one of the things that frontal lobes does, and when your frontal lobes diminish, then you have a feeling of oneness with everything. Okay, and I took a class once in Aikido. It was a presentation in Aikido with Ki. They showed me the unbendable arm, where I mentioned last week you have your arm. If you try to think rigid, then your arm is easy to bend. But if you think of a fire hose, then your arm is difficult to bend. And my interpretation of that is when you think of rigid, you're tensing up all your muscles, including the ones that bend your arm, because our muscles come in opposing pairs. And so if you can relax everything, and that's what happens when you think point, or you think flow, or think, you know, reach, you're just using the muscle that extends your arm and relaxing the one that's not. And so even if you're digging a ditch or something, it's best to relax everything that's not involved. Then they showed us an exercise of walking past someone who's trying to stop you, and they wouldn't stand in front, they'd stand at the side, but they'd stick an arm out. And if you're in your normal state of agitation, you're easily stopped. But if they relax, and they have a thing called one point,
and it could be, it could be your center of gravity, or it could be underneath the floor, or it could be it's like a hypnotic induction. You think what's the universe, and then what's yourself, and then half of that, and half of that, and half of that, and then one point. Or if you can just focus your attention on one point, it doesn't matter what it is. Focus your attention on one thing. They had another method where they'd stand in front of you and put your hands on your upper arms and rub up and down and say, light, 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 and you think light and you feel light, and now you're in this hypnotic state. And so you walk past somebody who's trying to stop you, and it's very difficult to stop you. And then the instructor sat in a lawn chair, and his student tried to push him over backwards, and he could get him tilted up, but he just couldn't get him to go over, because this fellow was... They also did a test. They call it the key test. You're just sitting down with your arms at your sides, your elbows, with your hands forward. So someone slaps your elbow from underneath. Right? Not something you do every day. Slaps your elbow from underneath. And if you're in the normal agitated state, then you get knocked over. Your balance is disturbed. But when you're in this hypnotic state, then, you know, they can push your whole body, but you won't tilt because your reflexes kick in. That's my interpretation. You have reflexes that kick in when you're in this hypnotic state, when you're relaxed, that don't kick in normally. So they'd say, okay, sit here and look at this table, and let's put a coin on the table. Or maybe just look at nothing and then do the test, and okay, you're off balance. Now focus on the coin. Focus on the center of the coin. It's got a coin as of someone's face on it. Focus on the tip of the nose. And then they whap your arm and you'd be immobile. I said, well, what if you made a mechanical tester? And they said, because they don't have my perspective, they said, they have a rule in Aikido, whoever's the most relaxed wins. And he said, well, a machine is dead, so it's the most relaxed thing possible. And that's not my perspective. My perspective is a machine does always the same thing. When you hit somebody's arm from underneath, you don't know if you're hitting hard or soft. That's a variability in the test. So if you knock somebody over or you don't, maybe it's because you hit them harder. So I want a uniform hit, a uniform strike, and the machine can do that. I was not able to communicate all that to them. Anyway, that would be interesting. So they have their test. Mm-hmm. And then you put a coin on the table and you focus on that, and now you're stable. And now they put two coins in front of you and say, now concentrate on both coins. You try to concentrate on two things, and whap, you're off balance because you can't concentrate on two things. So then they say, okay, let's draw an imaginary circle around these two coins and focus on the circle. See them as a unit, and focus on this unity of coins, and they whap you, and you're stable. So that's very interesting that you can take multiple things. I was talking the other day about goals. Who among us has only one goal? Any kind of goal, a process I've ever heard of, starts with pick a goal. Okay, well, how do I do that? How do I pick one goal above all the others? What if I have multiple goals and I want to pursue them all? Well, maybe I can unify all my goals into one goal and I can focus on that one goal. That's the point. So from all those sources, which would take a while to pull out the key points from all of them, I would like to put together a guided meditation. Okay, relax and focus. And I'd like to focus on especially the wait but why method. And I also want to apply the method to itself. So my first goal is to relax. How do I relax completely? What's involved in relaxing? How do our muscles work? You know, do I tense up? Do I make a fist and tight as tight as I can and then relax? Because some people recommend that. Do I just wiggle my fingers and toes gently? Yeah. And there's Tai Chi, this slow rhythmic movements, and people get relaxed that way. So there's variations on how to relax. So that's another goal, right? Just the first goal is simply how to relax. So wait, but why? So Tim Urban studied Elon Musk and talked to him and his staff. And he said, if it were just Musk's money or intelligence or ambition or good intentions that made him so capable, there would be more Elon Musks out there. No, it's something else, what TED curator Chris Anderson called Musk's secret sauce. And for me, this series became a mission to figure it out. The good news is
figured it out, and he says, the thing that tantalized me is that this secret sauce is actually accessible to everyone and right there in front of us if we can just wrap our heads around it. So then he starts talking about flood geology. In 1681, there was a book that says around 6,000 years ago, the earth was perfect, and then the surface dried up, cracks formed, the surface releasing the water from within, and then we have the biblical deluge, and then we have mountains and valleys and caves and stuff. So this came down as an axiom that the earth used to be perfect. At some point there was a flood, and it's only 6,000 years old. And then geologists were studying the earth and rocks and things, and they kept coming up with reasons to believe that the thing is more than 6,000 years old, and that didn't fit, so they had to ignore what they were finding, or, you know, they had a problem. The flood geologists had to ignore the facts to fit their theory. And obviously, you can see where we're going with that. That's a bad idea. You should listen to the evidence and follow what that tells you. And then he says, so that's pretty obvious, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, after thinking about this for a while, I've come to an unpleasant conclusion. When it comes to most of the way we think, the way we make decisions, and the way we live our lives, we are much more like the flood geologists than the science geologists. And Elon's secret, he's a scientist through and through. Well, that makes sense because our culture is, you know, thousands of years old, and it's based on all this superstition and things we've learned accidentally, and the idea that we cannot form new knowledge. Throughout the Middle Ages, the idea was that there's no way to get new knowledge. What we need to do is to avoid losing knowledge we have, which all came from Aristotle, basically. And then about 300 or 400 years ago, the scientists started saying, well, if you want to know about a bird, the thing to do is not to read about what Aristotle said about the third bird. The thing to do is to look at the bird. And this was a radical thing. So he says, it makes sense that since this science thing was only invented 300 or 400 years ago and it hasn't taken over all of our culture, that most of the way we do things is not going to be based on that. It's going to be based on our more ancient things. So I believe that. Now he says, the first clue to the way Musk thinks is the super odd way that he talks. For example, human child, I'm scared of the dark, because that's when all the scary dudes are going to get me and I won't be able to see it coming. Elon says, when I was a little kid, I was really scared of the dark. But then I came to understand that dark just means the absence of light is where he put it. Somebody quoted him as a little kid, saying, well, it's dark is just the absence of light. And now he says, just the absence of photons in the visible wavelength, 400 to 700 nanometers. And I thought, well, it's really silly to be afraid of the photons. And then I wasn't afraid of the dark anymore after that. Now, I guarantee you, I know that his father was an engineer, and I guarantee you he did not make this up. His father told him, dark is the absence of light. And he's not giving credit to his father for that. That's unfortunate. I'm quite convinced. He calls this a super odd way that he talks. Well, if you hang around a university science department, physics, math, you will find plenty of people who talk that way, or engineering. This is just an engineering way to talk. Engineering way to think. So, our human father says, I'd like to start working less because my kids are starting to grow up. Elon says, I'm trying to throttle back, and that's throttle back has to do with, like, engines and things, because particularly the triplets are starting to gain consciousness. They're almost two. And our human single man, I'd like to find a girlfriend. I don't want to be so busy with work that I have no time for dating. Elon says, I would like to allocate more time to dating go. He was also an economist. Yeah, allocate is an economics word. It's all about allocation of resources. I need to find a girlfriend. That's why I need to carve out just a little more time. I think maybe even another 5 to 10. How much time does a woman want a week? Maybe 10 hours? That's kind of a minimum. I don't know. So, of course, he's very pressed for time because he's trying to do all this stuff. And so it makes sense. You know, if he's going to schedule dating, he's got to. Yeah. Bill Gates asked one of his employees, will you go out with me next Friday? No, I think he said, will you go out with me 2 weeks from Friday? And she said, ask me closer to the day. I'd rather be spontaneous. Again, he was setting up his company, and he had to fight everything. And he ended up marrying her. Okay, so I call this Musk speak. Musk speak is a language that describes everyday parts of life as exactly what they actually literally are. What makes Musk odd is that he thinks about most things in Musk speak, including very many areas where you don't usually find it. Like when I asked him if he was afraid of death, and he said having kids made him more comfortable with dying because kids sort of are a bit you. At least they're half you. They're half you at the hardware level, and depending on how much time you have with them, they're that percentage of you at the software level. When you or I look at kids, we see small, dumb, cute people. When Musk looks at his five kids, he sees five of his favorite computers. When he looks at you or me, or in the mirror, he sees a computer. He says that computer's on top of whatever else they are. And so we can store and process data and all of that. So he says, well, Elon cares a lot about his software. In fact, he cares more about that, his brain software. He cares more about than anything else, because that's what determines how he can do things and whether he can do things and how well he can do things. So it says the hardware is a ball of clay that's handed to us when we're born, but it's the software that determines what kind of tool clay gets shaped into. So he studies all these effective people, and he says it's convinced that they're software. So he begins what I call the want box, things I want, and there's a big box labeled want. So for the guided meditation, I would say, okay, you're unconscious. Please create a want box for me. And place into that box anything where I want situation A to turn into situation B. So situation A, I have a small amount of money. Situation B, I have a larger amount of money. Situation A, I'm in a job I don't like. Situation B, I'm in a job I like. There's a lot of poverty in Chad. There's a little less poverty in Chad. I can run 3 miles in 25 minutes. I can run 3 miles in 20 minutes. So I want things to be a little better. Next, the want box has a partner in crime, which we will call the reality box. It contains all things that are possible. And that there's a lot of things that are possible. There's a lot to learn about what's been done. And what's being done that makes more things possible. So that's things that are possible is an arrow under the big box that says reality. Pretty straightforward. Then he says the overlap of the want and reality boxes is the goal pool where your goal options live. So your conscious space could be a reality box and the goal pool. So you pick a goal from the pool, but then you're going to try to move from point A to point B. And again, his formula starts with pick a goal. How do I pick one goal? What if I have more than one? He doesn't get into that. So that would
hey,
be,
Rod,
that would be,
I don't mean to cut you off, but we've got about 15 seconds here left of the show tonight.
All right. So then we get a strategy and...
Alrighty, so we will catch you guys again next week, Friday. We got 2 seconds left. Love your faces. Have fun. Have a good night.
Okay. All right.